You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Hey, this is episode 286 of the IT in the D Show. We have a phenomenal guest lined up today. You're going to want to stay tuned for this. Glenn Zimmerman will be talking to us. He's a former anchor for WXYZ TV, but that is not why he's important. He's important because he's part of a company called Humanity and the My 31 Project. They're looking to make your personal and private data a human right. We've been looking forward to this for a long time. We're very excited to have him in studio. This episode is brought to you by our friends at Turo. Turo is a peer-to-peer car sharing marketplace where you can book any car you want, wherever you want, from a community of local hosts. From exotic cars to practical daily drivers, you can choose the best car for you, whatever fits your budget. Do us a favor, download the Turo app. That's T-U-R-O on the App Store or Google Play, or visit Turo.com. Get $25 off your first trip when you sign up for Turo and use promo code IT in the D at checkout. Terms do apply. It's kind of like Uber, but you get to drive. I kind of like it.
Except for when you're drunk and then you need Uber.
Right. So if you're sober,
get someone else's Turo. Car. Yeah, it's like sober, Turo.
Right.
Drunk Uber/Lyft.
Yeah. And you know what? You can fire when ready.
You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Following program is intended for mature audiences.
It's I Love the 80s, and this is 1986.
This is Max Headroom. And what you're about to witness is one of the most sinister-sounding intros to a trailer to one of the greatest epics ever.
This is Billy D. Williams. Bob and Dave and I are enjoying a Colt 45 right now. And remember, IT in the D, it works every time.
This is Jack Burton in the Pork Chop Express, and I'm talking to whoever's listening out there.
Where do you guys think you are?
The Library of Congress?
Detroit? Beyond the Sun?
Any of those, right?
Take him to Detroit.
No! No, not Detroit! No! No, please! Everything was that! No!
You will never find the more wretched hive of scum and villainy.
Then don't come! Shut up!
My best friend's sister's boyfriend's brother's girlfriend heard from this guy who knows this kid is going with the girl who saw Ferris pass out at 31 Flavors last night.
Hey, laser lips! Your mama was a snowblower.
Hi, this is Christy Swanson, and you're listening to the IT in the D Show. And Bob and Dave touch my hoo-hoos.
Hi there. Are you a large person? Pleasantly plump? A little on the hefty side, perhaps? Well, let's face it. Are you fat?
This is Guilfoyle from Silicon Valley, and the only two guys I hate more than Dinesh are Bob and Dave. Suck it, guys.
Negative Ghost Rider, the pattern is full.
What's up, everybody? This is Billy Zapka, Sweep the Leg, listening to IT in the D Show. No mercy.
One group rises within Metro Detroit and uses the power of the Matrix, networking, to light our darkest hour, and will continue hosting events until all are one. IT in the D. Read, meet, listen.
Hey everybody, this is Ted DiBiase, the Million Dollar Man. You're listening to IT in the D. And if you want to get your money's worth, stay right here. And remember, everybody's got a price for the Million Dollar Man.
You and mommy at the babe.
Babe.
Babe with the power.
What power?
Power voodoo.
You do.
They're
what?
Remind me as the babe.
Hi, I'm Ernie Hudson, and you're listening to IT in the D. All you nerds out there.
Nerds.
What is a nerd?
Hi, this is Ogre. You listen to a bunch of nerds on the IT and the D? Nerds.
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
Hey, Detroit, this is Anthony Michael Hall. You're listening to my buddies Bob and Dave on IT and the D.
Cafe, what is a plethora?
Hey, what up? This is Jay Muse, and you're listening to the IT and D Show. Snooch to the nooch. Listen, Muse, Snoogans.
There can be only one.
This is Scott Steiner, Big Pumpa Pump. The IT and the D Show is your hookup. Holler if you hear me.
Everybody in this country thinks they are special.
This is Robert Hayes, Ted Stryker to my mother. When I'm not hanging out at the Magumbo Bar, I'm listening to the IT and the D Show. It's worse than Detroit.
from Detroit. This is the IT and D Show. This is Tiny Lister Debo from the hit movie Friday. Keep your lights on, because I still got the bicycle. Now get that mic out my face.
The only thing better than a glass of beer is tea with Miss McGill.
Hey, folks, this is WWE Hall of Famer Hacksaw Jim Duggan, and you're listening to the IT and the D Show. Tough guy. Ho!
Hi, this is Kelly LeBrock from Weird Science.
Hi.
Bob and Dave, what would you little maniacs like to do first?
I just can't resist your intense animal magnetism.
The question isn't what are we going to do, the question is what aren't we going to do.
Ludicrous speed! Sir, had you better buckle up? Ah, buckle this! Ludicrous speed! Go!
Welcome back. Thanks for clicking play. This is the one and only IT in the D Show. We are broadcasting live here on Monday night in Studio One in Podcast Detroit in beautiful Royal Oak, Michigan. This is Bob, the sales guy, hanging out with Dave the Geek. Nuri the FNG is in the house, as is Randy. I do the Twitters. Find us online.
I feel like you need a longer pause there to make your point.
I'm trying. I don't. It's awkward after a little bit. Find us online, itandthed.com. Do us a favor. Give us a like on the socials and subscribe to us everywhere. Fine podcasts are sold.
All right. So, dude, why is there something all the time now? We're in that time of year, and like we're going to be dead by June. I say that all the time.
It's the most wonderful time.
You have no one to blame but yourself, though.
I know, but so...
No, we get to go to cons, and then we get to sit there and watch Dave sit on his phone for 4 hours straight. Set a record. I've never... it's inhumane. I've never seen anyone do it in my life. Head down, phone... 3.5 solid hours.
The eye daggers right now going back and forth are intense.
Oh, yeah. Intense. He knows.
I deleted one of the games. I'm all done with Westworld because the idiots got sued because their game is a direct ripoff of some other game that Bethesda did because they literally just took the entire code base and copied it.
Oh, are you
and
serious?
Put it out there for Westworld. And so the game is getting pulled as of April. So all the time I have invested in that game is truly wasted time.
Good. It was wasted time to begin with.
It was not.
Yes, it was.
It was valuable problem solving.
No, you know what the worst part? Like when my father, when I was a kid and I'd play Defender or Asteroids or whatever, and he'd always, every time, never failed, did you win? And I'm like, yeah. Yes, Dad, I'm the big winner.
Did you see that meme today that was floating around? Because I friggin' loved it. It was me in 1988. You know, my dad's so stupid. He calls everything by the wrong name. He's just a moron. Why doesn't he know anything? Me today, I love walking into the toy room and calling my kids Minecraft computer Legos because it drives them batshit crazy, and that's worth it just every time.
We have become our parents. Just...
But no, so here's what's coming up. We got free podcast day this Saturday already. I don't know how that happened. Again, so quickly, but it is. We got Shot of History doing their live third, I think, anniversary party down at Old Shillelagh also on Saturday. So I think that goes from either noon or 2 o'clock to 6. I can't remember off the top of my head. But that's always a good time. Mikey will be there. I'm sure there'll be shenanigans because, well, it's Old Shillelagh. It's up on the second floor, and it's Old Shillelagh. So there's always drinking. And then our Ann Arbor event's coming up after that.
Yeah, Tuesday the 5th of
that's
March.
It's on Fat Tuesday? I'm so not
going to
be there.
We will not be going to that event.
yeah, Tuesday, March 5th at Haymaker Public House.
Where there's no hay and there's no makers.
There's no makers. I'm sure there's Maker's Mark.
Maker's Mark, yeah. Maybe that's why.
And then I think it's the 13th. Where we got roped into doing the thing at Specs Howard for the Women's Broadcasting or Women's Association of Broadcasters.
Nice.
Talking about podcasting and properties of podcasting, and it'll be demented and sad but social. But before that is Fantasticon Toledo. So we have all that stuff this weekend, and then next weekend we go to Toledo, which is the con that we bought the wrestling belts for.
because of all the stupid karaoke drunken shenanigans. Silence this year. I'm not singing. You're pulling out. I'm not singing. I don't believe you.
Nope, we're not going to do it.
Six Jaegers later and four PBRs, and Bob is belting that shit out the top of his lungs.
No, not even. It won't even take that many.
This episode of IT and the D is brought to you by Lenovo for Business. When it comes to IT, there's no end to your to-do list. From updating servers to cloud migration, from data management to mitigating user errors. With everything on your list, it can feel like there's not enough time to get everything done. But you don't just need more hours in the day. You need a difference maker. Something to streamline systems, keep your budget in check, and optimize your office for every kind of user. Lenovo is here to be a difference maker for you and your company by providing innovative technology, services, and support solutions. Is your workforce all about mobility? Lenovo has the laptops and two-in-ones to match. Shopping for data crunchers? Nothing packs power like Lenovo workstations. And whether you're shopping for servers or end-user devices, Lenovo has a ton of financial options that can help you get the most out of your 2019 budget. Let Lenovo make a difference for you, so you can make a difference for your company. To learn more about Lenovo for Business, visit www.lenovo.com/smb. Powered by Intel.
So we got stacks of great stories, but I'm going to start off with one of the ones that just blew my mind early on in the week. You got to love the Polish. There's a charity. They're on the hook for like $3,000. They basically wanted to study the flying pattern of the lovely stork,
which is an interesting thing to study if you're a scientist, right?
Well, yeah, because where do the birds go? What do they do when they're there? Then why do they come back? And the weather patterns or what prompts them to leave and go back?
Why not the Canadian geese?
I don't know, because they go to Canada. Nobody cares about Canada. So they basically strapped a GPS on this thing's back, and they basically tracked it as it basically migrated south to Africa.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. And basically, it was safe and sound. And then 10 days later, pretty much the GPS tracker basically went dead.
Hmm. Did the bird die? Did it get hit by a car?
Well, here's where it gets interesting. The charity got a phone bill from the – because it was done by – I think it was Katia, however you pronounce it, the phone provider in Poland.
So there's a SIM card in the
right,
GPS
Right, there's a SIM
tracker.
Card in the GPS. Right. Got hit with a $2,700 bill. So then they found out basically somebody, while it was in Africa, killed the stork, stripped the SIM card off its back, plugged into a burner phone, and just made 20 hours of like the craziest international calls nonstop to rack up.
That is so amazing.
I literally, like, they didn't know if it like got killed by a predator or anything, but when they got the phone bill and then they've tracked where the calls were going and coming from, yeah, pretty much it.
It's the same thing with like those bird scooters, right? I mean, they have SIM cards in them as well for data.
Oh, yeah.
Like, how do you secure your IoT device? And that's got to be a thing that's going through everybody's mind who's making these things is what happens when my bird falls out of the sky and gets the SIM card.
Oh, they know how to strip those things clean, the birds, not the storks.
The birds, either way.
Right. But the one that got my attention and the one I couldn't help to talk about was –
Was Shinola saving Detroit?
No, that's not Shinola's fault.
We couldn't exist without Detroit.
No,
thanks.
If you don't know what we're talking about, somebody at the Oscars basically.
Yeah, the guy from the green room.
And he had no affiliation with Shinola or anything.
No, he's a long time
customer.
Well, yeah, he's a long time friend of the owners.
But he basically went out and said, you know, Shinola saved Detroit, and then Twitter went nuts.
Because this $500 timepiece is definitely a donation to Detroit.
Right. And the new Detroit 2.0 crowd didn't like it, and Shinola had to come out with a statement, and like, you know, and I'm not gonna lie, I said, you know, they might not have saved Detroit, but they were
one of the first ones that actually
they were one of the first ones. I mean, I'm not gonna again, I don't, and they built a thing. Like, they made it like Brooklyn cool to be from Detroit. And, you know, I know Chrysler started with the imported from Detroit a little bit before them, but like, this was truly, anyway, I don't watch the Oscars anyway. So I heard
about it this morning.
Right.
I watched 0.0 seconds.
So no, but the one that, the story that came up is, you know, we all talk about Facebook all the time, and a story came out from TheVerge.com about a company called Cognizant.
Dude, this was weird.
They're called a pretty large consulting company, right? Cognizant does all kinds of IT services.
Absolutely. But the story is called The Trauma Floor, and it's about the secret lives of Facebook moderators. So Facebook outsources their moderation queue to this company that basically built a call center of $15 an hour entry level.
Well, yeah, and it's every time you hit the little button that says report this post, this is who that goes to.
Right. Here's where it gets me. There's some things where I was like, are you kidding me? Then some things I was like, okay, I get it. Now, apparently they're only allowed 2 10-minute breaks.
Nine minutes in wellness time in case they see something that's so traumatic right. that they have to stop away from the machine. I think it was two 15s
and a
30.
Yeah.
But that includes pee breaks.
Right.
And when I was talking to Nuri before this, I'm like, I think I peed like 6 times today, 7 times at work. Because you drink a cup of coffee, a liter of water. You know, you take your
beers.
You take not a couple, yeah. No,
if you're at WeWork,
you take your vitamin B. Then all of a sudden, you know, and I'm like, they're stuck. They can't like they literally are on, like they can't move.
And right. hundreds of employees were just sharing one urinal and 2 stalls for the men and 3 stalls in the women.
So there's a line.
So
not just that, you can be fired just for making errors. Which I don't even like, – they tried to say what an error was, but I didn't really get it.
Let me go back to the bathroom real quick, though. Like, this is not something that's specific to Cognizant and Facebook. This is the call center industry, Bob. This is what I do for a living.
Right.
Is that when
which
people,
I can't comprehend.
When people come back late from their 15-minute break, they're dinged on their schedule adherence or compliance, right? So, like, it is mechanized. Factories are the same way. Dude, Amazon's warehouses,
right.
I think, are probably
yeah,
the same
about,
way,
no, we
right?
We've talked about that a bunch of times, yeah.
Yeah. It's basically like you're a robot in a factory, more or less, even though you're in a call center or you're – yeah.
But apparently, like, this place, like, they're sharing, like, the most racist and sexist and dirty videos
well,
and
yeah,
images.
The employees, like, they're dealing with, you know, like, they're watching videos of people getting stabbed to death. They're watching drone bombing videos. They're watching all this shit that's getting uploaded, have to determine if it's appropriate or not. And so part of the culture there now is they're trying to share the darkest shit with each other. Trying to like, oh my God, here's the worst thing ever. Oh my God, here's the worst thing ever.
See, this is the thing, like the trauma and PTSD of seeing some of these videos. I'm like, either they haven't been, either the people that are working there haven't seen it yet, or they need to hire a bunch of 45-year-olds that grew up on Consumption Junction. And I mean,
Rotten.com.
I was raised on 2 Girls, 1 Cup. And you mean to tell me that anything else on the internet is going to traumatize me?
Dude, well, for what it's worth, though, I mean, like, I remember watching the very first beheading video that
Woof.
Came out.
Dude, we grew up on Faces of Death at Blockbuster.
Yeah, but we all know, and it came out later. Most of that was fake.
But it didn't matter. At the time, you thought it was real.
Yeah, but like that, and like that changed me a little bit. Like I've refused to watch or click or look at anything like that ever again.
Oh, I
like,
can't watch
that
them.
That was viscerally disturbing. So I mean, I get it. And watching that for an 8-hour shift, day in and day out, over and over and over again. Yeah, it's going to mess with your head, dude. It really, really will.
But are they putting – they're not putting – people are uploading that stuff. I just thought it was like people getting shot.
Well the story they told was about a girl who was in the training class and basically had to moderate in front of her class a video of someone being stabbed over and over again. She's like – and I could hear him screaming for his mom.
Yep.
Like, and she's like – and that was so hurtful. Like, she ran out crying. And apparently they have counselors who work on site and a counseling hotline.
Only
and
part-time.
Only part-time.
And part of the story is like when she was dealing with that, the guy wasn't there.
But then the kicker to all of it is they all have this weird bond because of seeing – and they're all banging. So like they're getting caught banging in the lactation room, in the bathroom,
I mean,
in the stairwell, and the.
Unique.
I can tell you a bunch of I can tell you a bunch of stories about my first call center. Yes, what people do when they're stressed out at work, they do some really weird shit. I'll tell you stories.
They just don't pull a flask into work, like.
Well, that too. Like there was a supervisor that I worked with, and every day she had a Circle K Big Gulp, and it was always full of liquor.
Well, dude, and they talked about how the vast majority of folks there are smoking weed.
Yeah,
you know, every time they get a break or at their desk, they're vaping weed. I mean, it's.
And the kicker on this, they make $28,000 a year, which is what, 1/10 of the median Facebook salary?
Yeah.
Woof.
Well, that ties into the Seattle Times story about the Amazon employee. They basically got
fired. This is a
fired.
Shitty story.
They got fired, but the employee has Crohn's disease, and he's basically suing Amazon now for lack of bathroom access. Now, this is an interesting – like, I'm going to play devil's advocate here. Timmy over here is going to poop 10 times a day, and I only get one 10-minute break to poop. you know, go, I can't, if I do it on my lunch, I'll go, well, I want to poop 10 times a day like Timmy does.
Right.
Right. So, like, granted, he shouldn't have been fired, but like, they set a precedent. Like,
well, I mean, so say you have to poop an extra 20 minutes worth a day. So what could a company do to do that? They could say you have to work 20 more minutes right. on your shift, and they could probably put you right next to the bathroom. These are two things that the article called out that Amazon allegedly did not do.
Yeah,
they
could have
relocated
them
right next to the bathroom so you could just make a quick run, or say, all right, well, you're going to work 20 more minutes scheduled per day to account for this.
Right.
Or not pay the dude for 20 minutes. I mean, what's – I don't understand.
And he worked a 2 to 11 p.m. shift. And if you know anyone with Crohn's, it sucks.
Yeah, it's
but,
it's terrible.
You know, like the old saying goes though, right? You know, boss makes a dollar, I make a dime. That's why I poop on company time. So I mean, I guess I don't blame the guy, and he's probably going to make a lot of money off this lawsuit.
We'll see.
Absolutely.
So moron of the week has to be Robert Kraft, and the sad reality is it's not even the it's not even this week. It was a couple weeks ago. So if you don't know, you know, guy that owns New England Patriots. Got busted hitting an Asian massage parlor.
Was he had very stress in his back or maybe a lower back?
Apparently it wasn't his back. He was worried about getting rubbed, according to both the affidavits and the videos.
Allegedly.
That they have. But so here's the kicker to
me. Wait, what happened? So,
you didn't hear this?
That happens at those Asian spas?
Yeah, like the one we had up front for a while.
I just thought it was a sauna.
Yeah.
What's even worse, my phone when I leave my house says 15 minutes to Franklin Massage Parlor.
Which isn't even there anymore.
which means Apple thinks I'm a dirty, nasty. Right.
Nice.
Thanks, Apple.
But no, so the worst part about the entire thing is that so he went there 2 days in a row, January 19th and January 20th. When he went there January 19th, this was, you know, when he went there January 19th, he got stopped on the way out by the police who asked him for ID, so he knew the cops were watching the place, still went back on the 20th.
And he was in a fancy car. He was in a Bentley, right?
Yeah. He wasn't driving. He was a passenger in the
And
vehicle.
Not only that, it was the day of the AFC Championship game.
Yeah.
It wasn't like a Monday.
Yeah. No. Had to get that tension out.
The best is someone already came up with the custom Funko Pop with him in a robe and then the
Asian masseuse. Yeah, I that one just blew my mind. Like you have all the money in the world, like you and you're going to an whatever.
Hey, you know they say, you know, if you eat filet mignon every day, sometimes you want a good old White
just
Castle.
Crack it.
You just want a White Castle, you know. What are you gonna say? I don't know. But Nike had a fun week.
In a couple of ways, right?
Yeah, if you missed the video, Duke star, what was his name? I can't think of it. Zion Williamson basically did a you know, jump stop, and literally the sole of his shoe peeled off.
Fell off, yeah.
The bottom of his foot. That's not really the, you know, that made national news and everyone was talking about
it. Obama there watching the game and he mouthed the words, his shoe broke.
It was Paul George's shoe. So Paul George kind of ran on Twitter and said, oh, what Nike, what are you doing? Because of that, this is the amazing part to me. And that's why I'm only talking about it is Nike's stock dropped a complete valuation total of $1 billion because of a shoe peeling off the bottom of this guy's
foot.
But
here's the shocking part of that to me. Them losing $1.1 billion in valuation is only 1.7%.
But still, it's $1 billion, regardless.
To you and I, that's a big deal, but to Nike. Well,
no, I just saw the total dollar, $1 billion. I'm like, stock dropped because, like, what do you – like, here's what I don't – like, and that's one of the things no one ever understood is how you price stock, right? So, what, like, people are like, I'm selling because the shoe broke on TV. Like, you know what I mean? Like, stuff, there's stuff in the world I just can't comprehend and I won't.
The other weird thing about Nike, too, is that they've got this new fancy shoe that self laces. And apparently, there is
the Back to the Future 2 shoes,
yeah. And so it allows you to change the colors, it allows you to. There's an app that you get it, and apparently you update the firmware.
No, these aren't
shoes.
The Back to the Future ones. These are actual shoes. They're not a gimmick.
Yeah, they're $350.
No, but they're Back to the Future shoes.
Like it's a pretty cool concept. But apparently that there was an Android update that got rolled out this week to the app. So it wasn't Android. It was the app itself, which is now bricking people's shoes. So does that mean you can't use them as a shoe anymore?
You have to tie them yourself, I think.
Well, there are no laces visible.
So let me ask a question. So you got a button that ties your shoes. What the hell are they going to upgrade the firmware for? We're going to introduce a double knot. Like what? Like
what? There's also LED control and there's some other things in it as well. One person on Twitter wrote, "The first software update for the shoe threw an error while updating bricking the right shoe. The app will only sync with the left shoe and then it fails every time." This is like what? What kind of world are we living in where you're...
And Randy submitted a story of all ages that the president of Nintendo retired, and we're like, so what? What are you setting this story for? Well, the guy's last name was Bowser, which I thought...
The new guy's name is...
Or the new guy. Yeah.
So Bowser has taken over.
It's on his resume. Like, you're on top of the list. You're made for us. Hey, are we going to... looks like we got our guest on the line. We're going to take a...
we'll take a quick break and then come back with him.
Quick break. We're going to come back. Glenn Zimmerman from Humanity and the My 31 Project. This is the IT and the D Show.
And we'll be right back.
IT and the D. Read. Meet. Listen. Networking Detroit, one beer at a time.
Hey, this is John Schneider from Nip Tuck Smallville, the haves and the have-nots. Oh, Dr. Quinn, hot in Cleveland. Cigarette Life, the American Teenager, and just about everything you can possibly imagine. And oh, yeah, the Dukes of Hazzard. You're listening to Bob and Dave. It's the IT in the D Show.
ITinTheD.com.
Hey, welcome back. This is segment two, episode 286 of the one and only IT in the D Show, broadcasting live here on Monday night, Studio One in Podcast Detroit, beautiful Royal Oak, Michigan. Bob, the sales guy, Dave, the geek, Nuri, the FNG, Randy, I do the Twitters. Find us online. I just said longer for you. Find us online at itinthed.com and give us a like on the socials and subscribe to us everywhere fine podcasts are sold.
Hey, so Turo is a peer-to-peer car sharing marketplace where you can book any car you want, wherever you want it, from a community of local hosts. Turo is available in over 5,500 cities across the U.S., Canada, the U.K., and Germany, with over 9 million users worldwide. Choose the car that's best for you, often at a lower cost than traditional car rental agencies, and customize your experience for whatever your adventure demands. Turo has over 850 unique makes and models available, including Tesla, Porsche, Mercedes-Benz, BMW, Ferrari, Subaru, Toyota, and more. I feel like they're go with the Tesla, Porsche, Mercedes, BMW, but hey.
The good stuff.
Whatever you need. Whether it's a truck to help on moving day, a swishy sports car for a luxurious weekend away, or a vintage van for a picture-perfect road trip, Turo lets you find the perfect vehicle for your next adventure. Turo has more than 350,000 vehicles listed globally, and many hosts offered to deliver the car right to you. Insurance options are available for every trip. Skip the rental counter with Turo. Download the Turo app, that's T-U-R-O, on the App Store or Google Play, or visit Turo.com. Get $25 off your first trip when you sign up for Turo and use the promo code IT in the D at checkout. Terms apply.
I'm looking at a new Mustang, $51 a day. Like, seriously, that's
why not?
A fun weekend? I mean, seriously.
Yeah, just go play and life's good. Yeah.
And it's convertible to boot. Anyway, hey, we are very lucky to be joined by Mr. Glenn Zimmerman. If you recognize the name, he used to be an anchor here locally on WXYZ TV. Now he's fronting a group called Humanity and the My 31 Project. Glenn, how are you, sir?
I am great. How are you guys doing?
Doing never been better in all our lives. Appreciate the time you spent with us. So I guess before we kick in, this is Nuri, this has kind of been near and dear to your project or your heart. So I guess you fire away.
It has. So I was scrolling through Instagram, as I do pretty often, the other day, and I saw an ad that caught my attention. And it was a picture of a luxury sports car, and it says, "Why isn't your data working for you?" or something to that similar
effect. Right.
And I pulled up the ad, went through it, and I found Glenn and Humanity and the My 31 movement. Basically, My 31 and the premise is just so interesting to me of having data as your 31st human right.
Well, we've talked about this a number of times on the show, where just exactly how much of your data is out there, what it gets used for, and what it can get used for.
Absolutely. And how if you're not paying for a service, you are the service.
Exactly.
Right? So I looked up Glenn and we got in touch and had a really great conversation. So Glenn, welcome so much to the show. Thank you for calling in tonight.
Oh, it's great. It's a pleasure. Yeah, this is something that I have to say has become an absolute passion of mine. This idea that we are constantly creating data. And when people talk about data in this day and age, the first thoughts that come to mind are Facebook and Google, you know, some of the big tech companies. But you know, the part that I think is the most interesting is some of the stuff that you don't think about. For example, every time you go to a doctor and the doctor prescribes you some sort of a drug, or you have some lab work that's done, or let's say there's an MRI or there's a procedure, all of those little data marks get put on your electronic health record. And then the software companies that run the EHRs de-identify your data. They take out 18 different identifiers, like your name, your social security number, stuff like that. They do that in order to be compliant with HIPAA, which is the privacy regulations in the United States around healthcare. And at that point, it's fair game, apparently. They can sell your data. And we're talking to the tune of $67 billion annually is an estimate for that we came up with. Upon our research.
$67 billion. Yeah. And this is data that I don't have a choice of what happens to it, right? So I pay the doctor. I pay for my lab work. I pay for my drugs. All that stuff goes into an EMR, and then they're making more money on top of my data.
Wait, like, Glenn, let me ask you this. Where is the worth on that data if all of the – I guess all the decent parts are stripped out, right? What's left? Why is that worth money?
Oh, it's not the decent parts. So, you know, just to kind of explain that briefly, the reason that stuff is stripped out is allegedly to maintain your privacy. They can't ever determine the real human being. Now, we all know, especially in this age of quantum computing that's coming on, but even in the here and now with artificial intelligence, it's already very clear that people can be re-identified from those data points. It's very clear. So the notion of this idea of privacy in the data world is kind of mythical, right? I think it's something that we tell ourselves so that we can sleep well at night. But what it really comes down to is that there's this like underbelly of data that is being sold. And the reason it's valuable is because your human body creates all sorts of interesting little anomalies. Each one is different. Think about like your mother, your father, your grandparents, your sisters, your brothers, your kids. All of us are different, and we're creating constant different data points. Once those data points are collected in aggregate, they make for tremendous research, right? So this is a research study in progress, and this is also marketing in progress. Those are the two main purposes for this data. So part of you are thinking, okay, well, it's research. That's the common good. I can go down with that. I can support, you know, cancer research or something of that nature. But the problem is that it's not simply for the common good. This is out of money that's being generated from all of this as in the hands of data aggregators, data sellers, and data brokers. Like these are the people, these are the companies that you have no idea about, but many of them are multi-billion-dollar companies. And that really is the point here. You know, you can look at this as data in aggregate, right? Whether or not you're talking about healthcare data, you're talking about consumer spending habits, browser history, social media, even the energy consumption of your home or your geolocation information, like these are all data points that are being tracked and monetized off of you. And talking about healthcare, this is one of many different data points that your body is creating. So why don't you have control of how it's used? And if it is, in fact, generating massive amounts of money for a third party, why don't you have a seat at that table?
Sure.
And that is what the My31 movement is all about. The idea is that 1948, the United Nations declared that there were 30 human rights. So we all have 30 human rights. Stuff like, you know, you're supposed to have some sort of shelter, that you're immune to torture, like things that we have learned from history. These are bad things and we should not repeat them. But in 1948, they could not possibly have looked into the future and looked at what a digital economy would look like. And that's what we're experiencing right now. So as a result, we believe that this is such an important point because data really is the currency of the future. And I'm happy to go down that road with you guys. And in talking to Nuria, it sounds like you guys dig it too. You know, how data starts really fueling machine learning and artificial intelligence and what that world really does look like in the not so far future. But if data really is the currency of the future, then, and the data is coming from us, why don't we own it legally as our property? And we believe that should be the 31st human right. And that's the whole notion of the My31 movement.
No time is better than now, because if you talk to any technology company today, they're all touting that data is the fourth industrial revolution. When you're talking about data as being currency, yeah, we don't even know where this is all going yet. And grab, you know, time to grab it now, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
And the market is, what, $200 billion a year just in the exchange of data? Like, this is not a small thing, right? And it was funny.
No.
I was looking at the news today, and I saw that the governor of California is proposing that data, that people basically are shareholders of their data, which is not what you're proposing. Yeah. You're proposing going a step further, right? Why does the My31 movement say data as property is such an important thing?
Yeah, what the governor was saying is basically that there should be a data dividend, that it's the equivalent of like your data is being capitalized on, so you deserve to get a cut. We believe that it should be more than that. I think that the big question that a lot of, maybe I should just kind of explain this for a quick second. This world of data gets very complicated because it all gets mixed together. The notion of data privacy, security, access, all of these things get blended together into the same conversation. And really, they're different. They mean different things. And they're all very important, right? I want to make sure that nobody takes my stuff without me saying it's okay, right? That's privacy. I think that is important. And everybody's focused on it. But what the part that no one really is willing to go to because of corporations, they're being frankly afraid to go here because what it means is no one's defining who owns it. And that to me is the most critical of all of these discussions, because as we're talking in a world right now, and you just mentioned it, $200 billion in aggregate globally around data, but this is growing exponentially. I mean, think about this. I imagine many of your listeners have either a Google Home or an Amazon Alexa, right? Or an Echo. So when you talk to Alexa, here's the question I like to ask. When you talk to Alexa, in order for Alexa to react when you say her name, what does it have to be doing?
Always listening all the time. We've talked about that a million times.
Like listening all the time.
Yeah, if it's not always recording, how does it know? Yeah.
And so where is all the data going? And this is just one example. You look at like the genome work that's being done, 23andMe back last year in June, I believe it was, you know, sells $300 million worth of genetic material that they've collected to GlaxoSmithKline for a big genetic research study. That's another place where data is being aggregated in a place. You spit in a cup. You think, okay, I'm going to get my whole background history and my family and stuff. But you're not thinking to yourself, I'm just empowering this company to make millions of dollars.
Well, not only that,
so,
but I mean, that's actually one
looking
of
at.
I'm sorry, that's actually one of the stories we didn't get to in the first segment was that there was a place, I think it's Santa Monica, California, where a 45-year-old cold case just got solved by a DNA hit through 23andMe. A 45-year-old murder. So, I mean, the data's out there, and people are using it in ways you don't think they are. That's the point.
Actually, even a more recent case than that, I believe it's called Family Tree is the name of the other company. It's a different company that's in the same ilk as 23andMe. Yep. And they just actually openly sold data to the FBI. Now, again, you might say that's for the common good. That's for, you know, security, whatever it is, whatever side of that you're on. I believe I want to have the personal decision to decide what side of it my data should go on.
Yep.
Now, you know, and that's the whole point. So back to this whole idea of ownership, that's why it's important. If we don't own it, and this world is expanding exponentially, and that's the point that I'm making. Right now, we're at $200 billion. I mean, in 10 years, there's exponential growth. 10 years from that, I mean, you see these science fiction movies where the worlds exist all within some sort of virtual or simulated environment. You know, like, it sounds oh so cheesy and so futuristic, but when you look at how our world has changed just in the past 20 years, and you realize how much data is collected around that and how much data moves it, think about what that means for our future. You know, I mean, I really get passionate about it. If we don't own this and we don't take control of it now before it gets too big and we won't be able to control it, there really is. And I've always said this. I don't like saying things that invoke fear. That's something that I've always said because, frankly, as somebody who used to do news for a very long time, that's the tease of the newscast. Right. Everything within media is about trying to invoke fear. If you don't do this, something bad can happen. Oh, there's a fire. Be afraid of your environment, right? All of it is about fear. If you don't watch, you know, you can be in trouble. The bad things can happen to you.
Something in your fridge will kill you. Find out why at 11.
Fear. Yeah. What was that?
Something in your fridge will kill you. Find out what it is at 11 o'clock.
At 11 o'clock, exactly, right? Like, I don't like saying things motivated by fear, but the truth is I really am scared. I mean, if we don't own it, we're already seeing this massive divide between rich and poor. I mentioned this to Nuri. Oxfam just put out a number the other day. I believe it was if you take the 26 richest people in the world and combine their net income, it would be the equivalent of the poorest 50% of the world. So 26 people equal 50% of the world. Like when you're looking at these divides and you're looking at controls and stuff, if we don't own what actually comes from our bodies, I really do think we're putting ourselves in a very vulnerable position. Whether or not you want to monetize your data or not, totally up to you.
So
some people are like, yeah, monetize it. Other people are like, well, it's not really worth that much right now, but maybe in the future. For me, it's about control, controlling my me. It's literally the digital version of me.
So, Glenn, let me ask you a question. What's the difference, and how do you perceive the difference between opt-in services like a Facebook and a Google and a 23andMe, where I actually purchase and part of the T's and C's, and it could include selling my data, versus things like Equifax, which I had no part in becoming or them using my data or knowing who I am, right? And I didn't buy their product, but them selling my data. See, for me, if I'm opting into a product, maybe it's part of the game. But the Equifaxes and those people of the world are the ones, you know, and especially the HIPAA stuff too, which I didn't even have a clue that medical companies sold my data. How do you perceive the difference between the two?
Yeah, I'll answer in a quick second. But just so you know, most doctors don't even realize that this is happening behind the scenes. Like most doctors, when we talk to them, they're like, what happens? So this is not like this shouldn't, you know, change your relationship with your doc. This goes much further down the chain. But to answer the question, there is a clear difference. You know, in some places, you're getting an exchange of service. You know, when I first heard about, you know, what Humanity.co is doing in the My31 movement, right? My thinking was, well, you know, there's a contract, an unspoken contract you have with Google. I will get this wonderful, you know, search engine for free, and I'll get Gmail and all these services for free. But, you know, you're going to take my stuff and you're going to market to me and you're going to, you know, that's the deal. Right. And so, you know, the deeper you look into it, you start wondering whether or not it's a fair deal. You know, that's a different story. And as data becomes more and more valuable, and as the uses of data become more diverse, you know, you might want to have control of where that data is going. But at least there's an exchange. In these other cases, and I would put 23andMe in these other cases, 23andMe does not come out and say, hey, spit in the test, we'll give you your genetic history, and of course, we're going to sell your stuff to these large companies and make lots of money off of it. Like, that's not what they say. You know what I mean? So I put them actually not too far away from, like you were saying, the credit union, the credit like Equifax, or, you know, frankly, like if you're looking at a lot of like the location trackers on apps and stuff, you know, there is actually reports recently, and this does include Google, that there was no way to turn it off. And so you were being monitored and recorded and your data was being aggregated based upon your location. And then, of course, that was sold downstream. So there's a huge difference in my mind between the places where you're paying for a service and the service has absolutely nothing to do with the data acquisition, and yet there is still data acquisition. And in other cases, at least there's some sort of a brokered exchange. However, I'll just say this. In a lot of these service areas, regardless, there's kind of an implied consent. You know, some of these terms and conditions that we're given right now, no one reads those. And the companies that put them out, they're banking on that.
Biggest lie on the internet.
So, it's absolutely true. So I do think that we're going to see a shift, and we're already starting to see a shift as more and more people are starting to recognize what's happening right now is wrong. And, you know, we believe that when you have a property-centric model, it actually solves both problems. It solves this issue of who owns the data and empowering the person while simultaneously actually handling the privacy issue all in one fell swoop. Because, you know, as we've seen happen with the California law that went into effect last year, or I should say that was at least passed last year, and they're still trying to figure out how to put it into effect in 2020. And then GDPR, which went into effect last year in Europe. The enforcement of this stuff is very challenging. And it oftentimes doesn't really do what you think it's going to do. Because let's say you're Facebook and you take my data and then I give it to somebody else. Well, then is the other somebody else also still under the same roof? As you are, like, because, you know, that's the thing about data. Unlike other strategic natural resources like oil, I have a barrel of oil. It is consumed. It is done, right? Data is non-consumable. We can have multiple buyers at the same time for the same data set, and it doesn't really affect one, and it's non-rivalrous. So, for example, if I have a barrel of oil and you have a barrel of oil and we go to market at the same time, you and I are in competition. But our data sets are not in competition. They're actually harmonious and complementary in a lot of cases. So data really, and you know, I'll just end with this. And I get really fired up about this stuff because, I don't know, the more I look into it, the more I see really where this is all going. And so, I don't know, I'll stop. Ask me questions. I just think this is something that most people don't even think about.
No, it's great. I remember I was watching Bruce Schneier give a talk at a con a couple of years ago. And he said that data was going to be the pollution problem of the information age because, like, you're right. I mean, so there is that I'm selling my data to a downstream broker who sells it to a downstream broker. What about all the data just sitting around forever since magnetic storage is so cheap and ubiquitous? Like, data will always be a problem, and people aren't deleting data. Data is just always out there. So I guess this brings us to, how is humanity in the My31 movement going to – I mean, what can I do? What's your app? What are you proposing? How are we going to fix these things?
So what the app does is, and it's available, it's just hashtag My31 for the 31st human right. And the app's available on the iPhone, so at the App Store, as well as Google Play for Android. And what it allows you to do is it allows you to get your title for your data. It's like a title like you would have for your car or your house. It's a property title. And your property title has a unique identifier, which is you. The app, for those of you guys who are really deep into tech, which I think this audience definitely is, it's based on blockchain. So what we're using blockchain for is in a different way. When most people think about blockchain, it's about how to protect the data. Our whole platform is not about collecting and aggregating data. The data remains where it is. What we do is we use that title and empower you as an individual to decide how you would like your data to be used. Are you the person who, you know, wants to keep your data for yourself? No one can touch it. It's mine. It's your property, after all. So why not? It's yours. I don't want anybody to touch it. Okay. Are you the type of person who wants to give your data away, to donate it to a cause? No problem as well. That is your choice. Or are you the person who says, you know what? My data is being sold anyway. I want a piece of that, but I don't want to sell my data because a sale is final. So I want to lease it. And so there are lease terms that are built into the app. And so in order for this all to be connected in, and I should say that because of the fact that this data economy is so large, we are only focusing at first on healthcare data for clear reasons, the most personal, largest data set. And it does seem to be the most egregious in terms of a personal breach. So we're focusing there. Once we reach a critical mass of people, we can actually activate it, turn the whole thing on, and actually it will start having teeth. And once we get to this critical mass of people, then actually money can circle back to people who want to be paid. Or if you don't want to be paid, you want to control your data, that's also the case.
That's amazing. So, you know, I think the critical mass is going to be the problem, right? Because right now, you know, we could all say that we have claim of our data, but until we have, I guess, a collective bargaining power.
This sounds very union-ish on some level.
It's... Actually, I mean, the term internally that we've been talking about, it's a collective renegotiation.
Yep.
You know, everybody, the terms already exist externally, right? Everyone says you've signed these forms. Well, look at what happened with GDPR. When GDPR went into effect, all those terms, you know, went away because it wasn't okay anymore.
Right.
What we're saying is you get to a certain number of people and everybody's going to have to start paying attention. In addition to that, you know, that's kind of like the decentralized nature of blockchain. Using the trust and transparency of blockchain, you can build through that trust kind of like a central authority, a decentralized authority. And unlike other uses of blockchain, we're actually solving a bigger question, not a what question of like this being a cryptocurrency, right? We're solving a bigger question of a how. You know, how do we as a society believe data rights should be accomplished? And, you know, in addition to that, we have seen some progress there. Just actually in January, there was a bill introduced in the state of Oregon, and it's a Healthcare Data Property Act. It's called the Healthcare Information Property Act, HIPA, if you guys want to look it up. And it basically says that for people in Oregon, if this bill is passed, they'll own their data as property. And then it becomes... So what that basically does, while not entirely essential for our concept to work, it accelerates it. It creates more of a need and a necessity for some sort of a solution to go into place. And our solution, while there are other players in this market around how to aggregate data and for people to control their data, ours, at least in my opinion, it's the smoothest and simplest, and it creates the least amount of friction to a data economy. Because we don't want to stop the flow of data. Data is important, right? It's very important. We just believe that people should have a say.
So with regards to this being referred to as the 31st human right, are you actually petitioning the UN to amend the UDHR?
We actually have had an audience. We've been invited to two different UN internet type of environments. There was an internet governance forum last November that we were asked to come to. We actually couldn't attend because of timing on it, but there was an event on December 10th of this past year in California, and it was the 70th anniversary of the UN Declaration of Human Rights, and we were there and we talked to them. So yes, we have actually spoken on that level. So it's that's the whole idea of a movement, right? Like you want the movement to gain public support. And to put this into context for everybody, really everything starts coming together when we hit 100,000 users. And then when we hit about 1 million users, that's when, you know, I think eyeballs are going to start like opening up and going, wow, this is a real thing. And it's not really that hard when you think about it. I mean, this isn't going to cost anybody anything. They're not giving up anything. All they're doing is they're getting more control and more power. So, you know, and if on your end, you're like, okay, you know what? I want to wait in the wings. I don't want to go too deep into it. Maybe I'll just sign up. I won't go and set my permissions. Okay. You know, we'll build trust with you there. We just turned on our marketing about 3 weeks ago. We're just shy of 10,000 people right now, and we're rapidly growing. And so all of these legislative efforts, I think, are going to just add to what we're already seeing happening around the movement.
And
let's face it, the world is smiling on where we're at. I mean, this is the right place to be right now.
Yeah, I saw an IBM commercial, was it just last night during the Oscars, where they mentioned data as a human right and a whole blurb full of other things. And I'm like, oh, wow, if IBM signing onto these ideas and publicizing these groups, this is just such a good thing. But I want to touch on one thing you said, Glenn. You said it doesn't cost people anything. And one thing we always say around the show is if you're not paying for a service, you are the service. And
true.
I know you're a public company, right? You're not a nonprofit. So how are you planning to monetize this in the future?
I will absolutely answer that. I just want to say something. IBM is our partner, by the way.
Oh, wow.
We have an agreement with a collaborative agreement with IBM, and our blockchain is IBM blockchain. So as far as we're concerned, though, that language was taken directly from our communication with them. And, you know, we fully support what you mentioned in the Oscars. In fact, if you go and you look at our social media, we were all over, you know, thanking them for, you know, bringing the My31 movement to the public attention at the Oscars. So anyway, I just wanted to share that. I mean, this has such credibility on many levels. But to answer your question, no, you're absolutely. Everybody should always say, wait a minute, you know, what's going on here? How are you guys going to monetize? How is this going to work out? Are you a nonprofit? So here's a very simple way that this all works. We are based upon this notion of doing good and then doing well. Very simply put, we have to help a lot of people before anything in our business monetizes. And the way that the business would monetize, it doesn't come from the people. That money would immediately come back through the sale of the data. What we'll do is, because this data that we're talking about, once people actually look at it, and they're like, you know what, I do want to support cancer research. I'm totally fine if it's a nonprofit doing the research, but if people are making money off of the sale of my data, I want to make sure that I'm compensated. You know, I don't want to stop the research, even if it's for profit. I want to make sure that I'm there, but I don't want to be left out. What that basically does is it creates, you know, a much more open and transparent relationship between the patient and the researcher. And this is something that researchers really, really want right now, because the data is not very good they're getting. You can imagine the 18 data points removed. There's no way of communicating back. All sorts of human error takes place in data. Our CEO and founder, Richie Atoro, he mentions this a lot, and I think it's a great analogy. The data they're using is like the equivalent of like data found in a brown paper bag that fell off the back of a truck. It's not great data. And so by creating this loop, by connecting the patient with these researchers, it's going to actually improve the quality of research. It's going to create better drugs faster. And not only drugs, I should say, you know, any sort of devices. So we believe that there's a huge ameliorative effect. This will affect the entire ecosystem. And pharmaceutical companies have already come out and said, yeah, we'll pay more for it. We'll pay a service fee for this explicitly consented data, or as we call it, fair trade data. You've heard of fair trade coffee.
Right.
This is fair trade data. So that's the way we would monetize. But in order to monetize, we obviously have to, I mean, everybody's going to be helped first.
So with all
make
of this,
sense?
Yeah, completely. Yeah.
With all of this data I have, what tools are available to actually help me manage the data itself?
So on the app, as we build it out, like right now, very frankly, the app is pretty remedial in terms of what it is, because what we need to do is we need to educate people about this. This is going to take a minute for people to wrap their head around it. So it has pretty simplistic ways of referring to it. Like it talks about And I could share something with you guys if you wanted to send it out to folks later on, just to show inside the app what the options are, how you can set your permissions. But eventually, it's going to be much, much deeper. I mean, we're going to be expanding out into other data sets. We've already had relationships and communications with ad tech. We've created partnerships there. So imagine, like, you know, rather than being stalked on the internet, imagine having a premium browsing service where the only people or companies who are marketing to you, you're being marketed only for the things that you actually want to be marketed for.
And then go ahead.
What was that?
Go ahead.
No, I that's just one of the examples of the way that this would play out in a different, you know, in a different area or in like a geolocation service area. Like, imagine being able to control where it's on, where it's off. And then again, you're taking part. You're able to decide whether or not you want to participate and whether or not, you know, you want to donate your data. And you can change it on and off at any given point. It's not like a set it and forget it. You just go into the app and do it. And so the way that it would work is based upon that I think I mentioned at the beginning, your particular unique identifier, your property title, wherever that goes throughout the ecosystem, because we would place it on your data, right? Imagine like inside of an EHR, wherever that EHR, electronic medical record, is sold or health record is sold, because of the track and trace capability of blockchain, it would follow the data throughout the entire ecosystem and ping back to your account. So you would know, and you would have control, and you would have visibility into what's being done and what's not. So, and you can control it.
The app
and
help.
It's our job at the front to make sure that all of these companies, to fight to make sure that the companies are respecting everybody's personal choices.
So then the app will also help me manage my data leases, you know, tell me,
correct,
you have this, you've leased your data to this company until this time and things like that?
Correct. But eventually, I mean, I don't want to let everybody know that when they go on there, and this is something that it's a challenge, right? You know, we live in an age of immediate gratification, right? I'm also susceptible to it. You know, you want something right now. If your computer is taking a minute to boot up, oh my gosh, you're going to pull your hair out, right? You know, this is not an immediate gratification. This is much more about holding your place in line. This is about putting yourself in the position so that, you know, within the next year, we can actually turn this thing on. And then a year from there, we're going to have more capability. And year after that, we're going to have even more. So as long as everybody understands that this is not, you know, I always tell my team this, you know, as we're working on something, that it's a marathon, it's not a sprint. There's so many different things to do here. But it's all very doable. And we're seeing tremendous amounts of movement. I just want to make sure that everybody who's listening, they're not like, yeah, I'm going to immediately make money. And it's going to take a minute.
Yeah, I went in and signed up, and I followed the healthcare flow, and basically gave me options if I wanted to allow my data to be shared, and then my leases of 1-2 year or more, and then there was a premium option for unredacted information. So I totally get where you're seeing this, and I totally see how this could balloon into basically the dozens and dozens of ways that we generate data and how we use it. So I am fantastically interested in what humanity is doing and where this is going. I think this is probably the most exciting thing that could happen. This is a revolution in data. So I'm
absolutely, it's very, very cool.
Yeah. So we've got a custom link that we're going to share out with all of our listeners that will take them right to the app download page where they can get some more information about it as well as download the app. I think it took me about 5 to 7 minutes to go through the app and put in my data and then stake my claim and get my title for my personal data. So, Glenn, thank you so much for being on the show tonight and telling us about this fantastic thing you guys are doing.
I really appreciate you guys having me. And if you ever want me to come back on, I'm happy to talk about it. You know, the one thing that I think is my biggest flaw with this is I'm so passionate about it. It just oozes from me because the deeper I go into it, the more I'm just really hopeful that we can actually take control as a society. I feel like, you know, I feel like I'm doing good. I'm doing good for humanity, like little H, not big H, right?
None of us have any familiarity whatsoever about being obsessively compulsive about things. None whatsoever. No.
No, I like the way you guys talk things through too. I mean, I've listened to the way you're handling conversations, and it's nice once a journalist, always a journalist. So it's nice the way that you guys explore things.
Thank you. That's always good to hear.
Absolutely. Hey, Glenn, appreciate hanging out with us. We sincerely appreciate the time. We'll definitely get you back on the horn when things, you know, if anything changes, definitely keep in touch with us. But yeah, Glenn Zimmerman from Humanity and the hashtag My31 Project. Sincerely appreciate it. And we're going to wrap things up. This episode 286 of the IT and the D Show. We'd like to thank Glenn Zimmerman from Humanity. Also like to thank our sponsors, Turo, Lenovo, and Turo. Thank you for keeping the lights on. We couldn't do it without you. On behalf of Bob, Dave, Nuri, and Randy, do us all a favor. Drink up your drinks. Get your phone numbers. You don't got to go home. You just got to get the hell out of here. See you next week. Drive careful. Beat it.
The emergency destruct system is now activated.
Conan, what is best in life? To crush your enemies, see them driven before you, and to hear the lamentation of your women.
Long live Flash. You've saved your life. Have a nice day.
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
Nice shooting, son. What's your name?
Murphy.
Make the run. The run.
Game over, man. Game over.
It's over, Johnny. It's over.
Nothing is over. You just don't turn it off.
I can't say no, and I don't really want to, so.
Well, especially with the back doors open.
Yo! Hold up! Time out! Time out! Y'all take a chill. You need to cool that shit out. And that's the double truth, Ruth.
Bob loves it in the can.
I hope this was as much fun for you as it was for me.
That's why I like it in the can.
Joe, warn the truth. Ohms, 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 ohms.
Fear me.
My job is to make sure this program is morally upright and cultural and wholesome.
Shut up, Mimsy! Shut up, Mimsy! Shut up, Mimsy!
Why would, like, Buick put their cars next to, like, the Bentleys? Like, why is this not marketing?
The alphabet.
It's brilliant.
Yeah, I can't take that position.
That analogy sucks because it's right.
Because you're getting your 8-track tuned up.
Are we at a break yet? Yeah, so now I'm just like doing like stupid stuff to make me laugh.
Venture capital is not the end game.
When are we going to talk about me?
Jane, you ignorant slut.
It's my show. I can say what I want. Yeah.
Kiss my ass. Go home. Unplug. Get off the goddamn internet. You are everything that is wrong with the internet right now.
You're so white right now.
I'm the whitest guy in the room. Just explain it to me. I love this city. I was banging on the wang.
Really? Should we talk about the tag team? Should I keep going or should I stop?
Can I just say, it's been great being on a show that talks about Mickey Rooney dying for 20 seconds and then poop for 10 minutes.